The Moving Iron Podcast is brought to you by these great sponsors. Are you looking to value your equipment more accurately, target the right buyers and close more deals, reach your ideal customer? Then look no further. Fusible isn't just about ag data, it's about action. Our best-in-class solution empowers you to value your equipment accurately, make informed decisions, and find the perfect prospects. Ignite your dealership's growth at fusible.com/movingiron-podcast. Out in the field, every decision counts. You wouldn't plant without testing your soil, so why would you prospect blind? Introducing EDA, your one-stop shop for ag equipment intel. EDA goes beyond specs and prices. You get deep dive data on every piece of equipment, like UCC filings that help track ownership changes and uncover potential sales leads, D&B firmographics, which help you understand the financial health and buying power of potential customers, market trends that help you stay ahead of the curve, and insights on equipment demands and pricings. With EDA, you're not just looking at data, you're seeing opportunity. You find the right buyer, sell smarter, and build lasting relationships. Visit edadata.com for your free demo and unlock the power of knowledge. For over 80 years, Iron Solutions has been your go-to data source for ag dealers, lenders, and manufacturers. Get powerful appraisal and value forecasting tools that fuel profitable decisions anytime, anywhere. Get your free demo at ironsolutions.com. Iron Solutions, confidence in every click. Today, there are many ways to finance ag equipment, but nobody delivers simple, fast, or flexible financing like AgDirect. Learn more about your options to buy, lease, and refinance equipment at agdirect.com. Valley Transportation has been hauling ag and construction equipment across the country for the past 33 years. Call Parker at 800-657-4910 for all your trucking needs. At Valley Transportation, our goal is to help you reach yours. This podcast is proudly provided by Axon, helping dealers move more iron for the past 100 years. Find out more at axontire.com. Move more iron with Axon.
Moving iron in the 21st century. Hardworking people working hard for you and me. Moving iron time and time again. Through the years you'll find us here.
Hello and welcome to Moving Iron Podcast. Marcus with Sean Hackett. Sean Hackett is with Hackett Financial out of Boca Raton, Florida. It's nice enough to come on and talk about what's happening in the world of commodities. Sean, how are you doing this morning, man?
I'm really good. Just got back from a late night trip back from Kansas, and I'm happy to be home. So
right on, man. Right on. Where were you at?
I was in Overland Park at the Andersons Group annual meeting there, and right speaking on. About my, you know, all my different weather cycles and such. And so I had a really good meeting with them, really high quality group, pretty smart people in ag and have their fingers on a lot of different parts of the food chain here in the U.S., from renewable diesel to ethanol to storage of grain. I mean, they kind of do just about everything. So
right on. Well, good deal. Glad to have you back and back in your office in Florida. So Sean, let's talk a little bit about yesterday. Had the April report come out. USDA report come out. Not a lot of fireworks there, but typically there's not a bunch of fireworks in the April report. I guess your reactions to what you saw yesterday.
Yeah, you know, I mean, half a dime a dozen. You know, they've removed they shuffled numbers around a little bit within a statistical significant error level, but basically it was just a punt. So, you know, it doesn't change anything, and it doesn't typically doesn't change anything. The next report, I think, when they make their first new crop balance sheet for the U.S. when they incorporate, you know, the new set of framework, that typically is a more important report, because at least it establishes the baseline for what expectations are going into the growing season and how to pivot. I know some people were thinking they were going to move Brazilian production down more, and they did move it down, but begrudgingly. So to the extent that there was anything that the market maybe didn't like the fact that they didn't move down the numbers as much as maybe the analyst average estimate said, although ConAb came out in the morning and, you know, and moved the numbers down, you know, more considerably. Once again, that's been a theme here for the last 3 months. ConAb more aggressive to the downside, USDA more unwilling to give up the downside. So at the end of the day, Casey, I really don't see anything has changed. We're We're starting the planting season. It's all about weather out from here. To some extent, geopolitics. And we're going to get the baseline next report where they're going to say, here's our baseline, the trend line yield with the acres that we came out with our planting intentions report. And given our demand, whatever the Ouija board says, and here's what we're starting with, and then we pivot from there. You
know? Right on.
It's the Ouija board algorithm.
Sounds scientific. Like the way that sounds. So all right, all right. All right. Let's talk a little bit real quick. Let's talk about cattle real quick. We had a really bad week last week because of the avian flu scare, and this week we've seen some bouncing around, but for the most part, it's kind of gained back what it had lost during that time frame, I guess. So, Sean, as you're looking at the cattle market, what are your thoughts there? And do you feel like this is more certainty in the cattle market that we've seen because of the avian flu, or is this just an overcorrection and now we're just bouncing back into, you know, what some normal levels should be?
Well, I kind of feel like when a market's due for a top, it just looks for an excuse, whatever that excuse is. And remember, you know, we had made the hard down from the fall. It's not unusual to have a secondary rally and retest the highs. I mean, that's that kind of a pattern is doesn't always happen, but it's a pretty typical pattern. And we were right back kind of retesting the fall highs, and we were just due for a top. And the speculators looked at the avian flu and said, you know, looks like we might have either disease spread into the cattle herd, which hasn't happened, or we could see some extra herd liquidation in the dairy herd that could add supply, which hasn't happened. But they used that as the excuse to sell off, and then all the technicals started to turn down, and we've had this more significant setback. And you know, the markets really hasn't bounced. It's, I would say it's stabilized. It's been kind of going back and forth. But I don't think we're going to rebound. I just don't think, when I'm looking at the overall consumer's appetite for chasing high beef cutout prices, I just don't think they're going to do it. I think they're going to pull back when we get over 3, and they're going to come back in when we get closer to 250, 265. And I think we're just going to keep going. We've talked about this back and forth cattle market trade now for months. And I think that we're heading to the bottom, to the lower end of the trading range. And your job, if you need to buy cattle, is buying the lower end of the range. And if you're a producer, you need to sell cattle. You need to cash sell the upper end of the range. And feeder cattle market's the same thing. I really think that although the avian flu was the catalyst to start the sell-off, I think it would have happened anyway. It just might have happened a little later, or might have taken a little longer. But I just don't see the fundamental reason. We got a lot of cattle placed on feed. We're adding weights with the warm finish to the winter with the cheap feed that we have right now. I'm just not seeing the fundamental reason for this market to take out the all-time highs from the fall and get into a new, you know, big bull market, at least not through the spring.
Right on. Okay. All right. So before we started recording, we started talking about what we're going to talk about today. And you brought up the how you're looking at commodities right now. And you're starting to see, even though the dollar's stronger, we're starting to see some movement in commodities, almost as if they are decoupling themselves from the dollar. So I guess, Sean, talk a little bit about that.
Yeah, it's very important to notice when historic correlations break down and something different is going on. When that tends to happen, it doesn't happen by accident. There's a reason for it to happen. Normally, dollar goes up, commodities go down, the dollar goes down, the commodities go up. This is normal operating procedure most of the time. But we've had in the last month, we've had this big rally in the dollar, and commodities are breaking out across the board. Gold broke out to all-time high, silver breaking out to, you know, the highest levels now in 10 years. The copper market breaking out to a 12-month high. Cocoa still trading near all-time highs at 10,000. The coffee market entering a parabolic move higher in the last week. Crude oil, you know, continuing to push past 85, and it wasn't that long ago it was pushing 70. You know, today the dollar is up strongly today, and commodities are up green all over the place. The correlation is breaking down. And that means a lot of people are getting caught on the wrong side of the commodity market. Normally, you know, they're taught you short the market. All these algorithms that people pay big money for, the AI algorithms, the other algorithms, the computers that are trading our markets are taught the dollar goes up, you automatically sell commodities and they're getting run over. and it's causing even additional buying as they have are forced to now buy back out of those shorts and recalibrate. Why is this happening? I think there's a couple of reasons. One, when you enter a war cycle or a war economy, we've talked about this before, we're entering a global war cycle, the 53.5-year geopolitical cycle that we've talked about before and we talk about in our presentations a lot. It reaches a crescendo in 2026, and these tend to create significant independent inflationary forces for commodities that are divorced from U.S. dollar considerations. That's the first thing. And the second thing is, it looks to me, Casey, just the way I'm looking at things, the minute that the United States decided it wanted to use U.S. dollar reserves as a weapon against countries it doesn't like Russia, like other countries, and threaten China, what the world is now saying is it's not safe to hold U.S. dollar reserves anymore in terms of completely having all your reserves in the U.S. dollar, because at any moment, the U.S. can cut you off from your capital. And I think that, you know, once the U.S. made that decision, I guess it was a year ago, then you saw central banks across the board buying gold like crazy, and you've seen everyone trying to find ways to diversify their monetary holdings away from the U.S. dollar, meaning the U.S. dollar reserve currency status is probably in the early stages of coming to an end. It's not going to come to an end tomorrow. I'm not saying this is like imminent, like next week, but we're starting the way a reserve currency loses its status. It's typically a 5 to 10 year period of gradual diversification away until finally the world no longer views your currency as the staple hoard. And I think that is another factor that's driving, commodities are hard assets. They're physical assets. Especially metals are storable assets. You can put them, you can take U.S. dollars, buy copper, buy platinum, buy silver, buy gold, stick them in a warehouse. And that is a separate independent reserve that the U.S. government cannot take away from you. And I really think that that's kind of what we're starting to see here is this big shift. The last time we went to one of these is when the British pound lost its reserve currency status to the U.S. dollar. And we had that period from, 1940s, at the end of World War II, where the U.S. dollar became the pronounced reserve currency. And we had wild commodity inflation during that period of time. And I think we're in the early stages of that happening again. If I'm correct about that and what we're seeing with this decoupling, one needs to completely shift their rule sets of how they trade commodities relative to currencies and the U.S. dollar and such. It sounds to me like we're entering a completely different set of rules for how commodities are priced. Normal supply and demand relationships may also break down, Casey. So what could start to happen is even a 2 billion bushel corn carryout that many claim is too much corn, in an environment that we're entering into, maybe that still means a $6, $7 corn market because people want to store corn to kind of have food security in an environment where the current monetary system is breaking down. So I think you have to keep a wide open mind right now to what you've learned your entire career of how commodities trade and what drives them to, we might be entering something different and price action is going to rule the day over those traditional models and those traditional relationships. And if those relations are breaking down, like we're seeing with the U.S. dollar taking off and commodities taking off, you had better shift in a hurry or else you're going to find yourself, in a really poor situation, either as a speculator or as a hedger. You want to make sure you're not getting caught totally misaligning with what's really going on here, because every single 53.5-year war escalation cycle has seen dramatic commodity inflation heading into and through those crescendo periods, which is 2026. So this should be a period where we should see war cycle inflationary pressures be the primary driver for commodities and have supply and demand and currencies be a second, not a zero factor, but a secondary factor to what's going on with the war cycle. And I just think with over 50 countries, I think, having elections this year, many in really important countries, the opportunity for geopolitical mayhem has never been higher. So,
okay. All right, so let's a couple questions. So when you're looking at so over this next 5 to 10 year period, I mean, I guess Rich Boss has talked quite a bit about a massive recession here at the beginning of the end of this decade, right? So you're looking into 2030 time frame and those kind of things. If this continues on the same path you said, 5 or 10 years from now, we start seeing some major decoupling of things from the US dollar. As you kind of look at this long term, I mean, what's that look like to you as far as you know, how does that affect the economy?
Whenever you're shifting the entire monetary system to a different set of rules, Bretton Woods, that's it's chaotic.
Yep.
It's complete chaos.
Yep.
Nobody's any idea what's going on. Nobody knows the rules. And so, when you reach that moment of chaos where you know the system is breaking apart and we have a new system we have to develop, the economy does not do well because the old system is completely collapsing while the new system is being ready to be rebuilt. So it's called creative destruction. You have to destroy what wasn't working and then recreate something new that's going to start working. And in that period of time, what we've learned is hard assets and profitable companies, I might add, that have good assets hold their value. Everything else completely collapses and falls apart. The purchasing power of everyone's money goes to zero. Job losses, income, but the assets maintain their value. And when you come out of it, when you come out of the underbrush and the fire is over and you get new growth and a new system, then those assets bring the economy forward and everybody, gets back on and we enter a new golden age of a new set of rules of the global economy. So just think of, let's say, 1945, right? I really would call it 1945 to the late 1990s was the golden age of the post-British pound reserve currency Bretton Woods reset. The minute we had September 11 attacks occur in 2001, in my opinion, that is when the U.S. dollar-based system began to break down. If you look at our reaction to that, the loss of freedoms that were taken as in response to the terrorist attacks on September 11, the loss of confidence that the U.S. government, that if we can't protect our own soil, how are we going to protect other people? And then, of course, the 08-09 financial crisis, which we created by our ridiculous lending policies in the housing market, once again showing that we're completely mismanaging the global economy, that we have no idea what we're doing, or if we do know what we're doing, we're being really purposefully poor at it, to the betterment of a few, to the detriment of many. And many, 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 many other countries got hurt, just terribly hurt in the 08-09 financial crisis. And then, of course, our response was to print – quantitative easing became the term of the day. Quantitative easing, print, 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 print. Mm-hmm. And then we had this brilliant idea to make money have no cost. We decided to have zero interest rates or darn near close to zero interest rates for almost a decade where we said there's no cost of capital, which is completely ridiculous. So it's just, we keep the fabric of the U.S.-based monetary system is breaking down piece by piece. And then in COVID, which, that's no one's fault. It just happened. But our response to it was excessive.
Very.
Yeah. To go from 20 trillion in debt to 35 trillion in debt in 3.5 years with no end in sight, with no real pulling back on the fiscal levers that were pulled at that time. And now that the cost of capital is no longer free and you're seeing the interest expense as a percent of tax revenue, as a percentage of GDP exploding parabolically, likely to reach 40% of the budget in 10 years time, it can't be sustained. There's no way to sustain that. The only way that they're going to try to sustain it, in my opinion, is it can print even more money. So what happens, the huge problem in the world, especially in the U.S., is income inequality. Those 1% or 2% or 5% mm-hmm. are incredibly rich. And the you know, the bottom 50% are, you know, are struggling just to put food on the table. In this environment of print, assets keep going up. Who has the assets? The people who have the money. Who doesn't have the assets? The people who don't have the money. So the people that have the money have the assets. They keep getting richer. And those that are don't have the assets, that don't have enough money to get those assets, are getting further and further behind. And at some point, Casey, you can't continue to have a few people. We've seen throughout history, you know, a few have all the money and the peasants have nothing. Well, you know what that leads to. It leads to revolution, it leads to civil unrest. I mean, this is nothing new here. Yep. It's going to happen if we keep doing this. And I don't see any politician in the elections this year saying that they're looking at reducing spending, becoming fiscally austere. Everyone is saying we're going to spend more money, we're going to hand more money out. Or, you know, I don't see anyone saying we're going to do anything different than what they've been doing all along. Highly inflationary, and so it's very, very good for those that are producing hard assets. You're producing metals, you're producing food, you're producing energy. You're going to keep being able to get a higher and higher price over time for your production. But if you're someone that's a consumer of such things and you don't have ample income to offset that inflation, it's just very, very difficult. And I really think that's where we're at. And I think that, it means that we're going to continue to enter a more confusing and chaotic period here. And I would argue that the elections that are coming up here in the U.S. and elsewhere, given that it appears that we are a country that's 50-50 split between what we think ought to be done here, no one's going to actually accept this election as being correct. Even if it is correct, they're not going to accept it. I think either way, whoever wins, the other side is going to completely go bonkers and create massive, massive civil unrest either way, because you just can't keep having a country with two diametrically opposed, bipolar, opposite views of how the country should move forward. You cannot keep a country together with that. There's nothing in history that ever says that you can. And so I'm afraid and I'm fearful that post-elections, whichever way it goes, it doesn't matter. The other side is going to say it was stolen, it was fraud, there was blah, 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 blah. Yeah, and whether it's right or wrong or indifferent, I'm not here to say any of that. I'm just saying no one's going to accept it, and it's going to lead to some really, really incredible, chaotic environment for the global economy, for the flow of goods, and for, once again, a further lack of confidence in the U.S. dollar-based monetary economic system, that if we have complete chaos here at home, how in the hell should anybody be relying on us for you know, managing the global economy, rightly or wrongly? So,
unfortunately, Sean, I agree with you on that one. So it's going to be crazy to watch
Europe. You know, Europe is going to
November
this
year. So
whatever I just said here, you could probably say in Europe on steroids. Yeah, I mean they're already.
Oh, you're already saying it. The farmers
trail
doing what they're doing over
already,
there and all that.
They're already there. Yeah. Even to some extent, you know, the UK with the pre-exit, and it's just, you know, we're seeing in Africa, we've talked about this in your show before, but Africa, you know, just falling apart at the seams everywhere you look, everyone is, it's just, the world goes through these, this is part of a reset, that everybody's pissed off that the older generation stole everything from the younger generation. The younger generation says, we're not going to take it anymore, and we got to go through a new system. And to have 80-year-olds running our country is preposterous, in my personal opinion.
Yep. What's that say?
I mean, look,
I'm not going to take it anymore, right?
80-year-olds are out of touch with most people that are in their working days and lower. They don't have any clue what is going on. In my opinion, they have no business running our country. And to think that after 4 years,
I totally agree,
we have the same two 80-year-olds to choose from, it seems. Maybe that'll change. Maybe there'll be something dramatic change before we get to the actual election. But right now, we have the same two 80-year-olds to choose from that we had the last time. That's the best we can come up with at a time that we have very, very serious problems that we need addressing. The best we come up with is the same two 80-year-olds that have no plan to solve any of this, and all and both of them, all they want to do is spend and borrow more money. Just spend and borrow in different ways, but that's all either right. one has shown they're going to do. Well, that's not what the country needs. I'm sorry.
Yeah. You're exactly right, Sean.
Sorry to rant.
we'll leave on a high note.
But all of this, again, coming full circle, all this is hugely impactful to asset prices. They are. And so I don't say this just because I'm just
absolutely
want to, you know, have a session of, you know, what was all this stuff. It actually is something you have to pay attention to. I pay attention to it because history says assets are greatly impacted when you go through these chaotic periods of time.
Yep, exactly.
I think so.
All right, Sean, probably a good place to stop. Folks want to reach out to you and get more information about you doing over at Hacking Financial, what's the best way to do that?
FerideX11, it's F as in Frank, FerideX11. We have a LinkedIn page. Our website is Hackett, Hackett, advisors.com. We do put some stuff on from time to time with different interviews and some things about our cycles and such that go over what we do to see if our cycle statistics and correlations might be of value to those that listen and watch your show.
Right.
Sounds
on,
good, Casey. Thanks.
Sean, appreciate you being on. We'll catch you again next week. Right on. I'm Casey Seymour with Moving Iron Podcast. Check me out on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram at Moving Iron LLC, LinkedIn at Moving Iron Podcast. Go see the YouTube channel, see the video version of this over at the Moving Iron Podcast YouTube channel, and check out the same content there on TikTok as well at Moving Iron Podcast. Got a new website up, movingironllc.com. Check that out. Got it revamped. Going to start working on some newsletters. So if anybody's interested in that, not a newsletter like I'm going to type it, but a video newsletter of what I see happening in the market around concerning the equipment space. So hopefully start getting that put together here soon and start getting those out, and you can sign up for that and it'll be totally free. So Look for that coming here in the next probably month or so. So check that out. Also got the information up for the Moving Iron Summit coming up here in Nashville, Tennessee, November 4th through the 6th. That'll be a different format than we've seen in the past, where we have a lot more breakout sessions and a lot more time to talk to guys like Sean Hackett. That's going to be put on a couple breakout sessions on the 5th there. So with that, I'm Casey Seymour. We're Sean Hackett. It's Move Smart, folks. Out. The Moving Iron Podcast is brought to you by these great sponsors. Are you looking to value your equipment more accurately, target the right buyers and close more deals, reach your ideal customer? Then look no further. Fusible isn't just about ag data, it's about action. Our best-in-class solution empowers you to value your equipment accurately, make informed decisions, and find the perfect prospects. Ignite your dealership's growth at fusible.com/movingiron-podcast. Out in the field, every decision counts. You wouldn't plant without testing your soil, so why would you prospect blind? Introducing EDA, your one-stop shop for ag equipment intel. EDA goes beyond specs and prices. You get deep dive data on every piece of equipment, like UCC filings that help track ownership changes and uncover potential sales leads. D&B firmographics, which help you understand the financial health and buying power of potential customers. Market trends that help you stay ahead of the curve, and insights on equipment demands and pricings. With EDA, you're not just looking at data, you're seeing opportunity. Find the right buyer, sell smarter, and build lasting relationships. Visit edadata.com for your free demo and unlock the power of knowledge. For over 80 years, Iron Solutions has been your go-to data source for ag dealers, lenders, and manufacturers. Get powerful appraisal and value forecasting tools that fuel profitable decisions anytime, anywhere. Get your free demo at ironsolutions.com. Iron Solutions, confidence in every click. Today, there are many ways to finance ag equipment, but nobody delivers simple, fast, or flexible financing like AgDirect. Learn more about your options to buy, lease, and refinance equipment at agdirect.com. Valley Transportation has been hauling ag and construction equipment across the country for the past 33 years. Call Parker at 800-657-4910 for all your trucking needs. At Valley Transportation, our goal is to help you reach yours. This podcast is proudly provided by Axon, helping dealers move more iron for the past 100 years. Find out more at axontire.com. Move more iron with Axon.
Moving iron in the 21st century. Hardworking people working hard for you and me. Time and time again, through the years you'll find a seed.